the government coming? We need gasoline. With gasoline, you're going to bring food and gasoline and clothes and gasoline to run generators. Bring us generators. Bring us something to get heat. We're going to die if we get killed with the weather. We're going to die. We're going to freeze. We have no cars. President Obama, please listen to us down here. We are going to die. You don't understand. You've got to get your trucks here on this corner.
Buckle your seatbelt. It's time for another episode of the Prepper Recon Podcast.
KatieArmor.com is your one-stop shop for the most affordable body armor, period. With packages starting at $169.99 and free shipping on every order, Katie offers soft armor and rifle threat-rated armor up to level 4. Go to KatieArmor.com and get your body armor today while you still can. Mention this ad and receive a free tactical scarf for a limited time with any body armor package.
Ready Made Resources is a trusted name in the prepper community because they've been around for 18 years. They offer great prices on night vision, water filtration, long-term storage food, solar energy components, and provide free technical service. Get ready for an uncertain future at readymaderesources.com. Today's guest has been away for way too long. It's author, lawyer, and international man of mystery, Glenn Tate. Glenn, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. I've never been called an international man of mystery, so I can add this to my, you know, host of things that I never thought would happen from sitting down and writing a bunch of stuff that was on my mind that ended up, you know, a lot of people reading. So it's been a crazy ride, and you've added to it.
and we've got probably a lot of new listeners that it's conceivable that two or three of them may not be familiar with who you are, but you wrote the 299 Days book series, which are available in paperback, Kindle, and audio edition. There's 10 of those. Great, great books. Now, There's some other books that are going around on Amazon right now, and I'm just wondering if that's another one of your nom de plumes. Are you the one that's writing those post-apocalyptic Amish romance novels?
Yeah, maybe it is. Let's go ahead and start that rumor.
Have you seen those? Have you seen the cover? And it's like the chick with the bonnet, and then behind her is like the biohazard in green, and it's like spray painted on a fence.
Please be making this up.
I am not making this up. This is real. It's the crossover of you know, our genre, which is the sort of dystopian America stuff, and the Amish romance novels. And there's some crossover books now.
I didn't even know there were Amish romance novels. I don't know that I've ever.
Oh no, that's a huge genre. This is there's thousands and thousands of these things, you know, where it's, and then the cover's always like some chick with a bonnet and a buggy and a farmhouse, and there's just, you know, it's, you know, one cover, the farmhouse is on the left and the buggy's on the right and the chick's in the middle, and it just, you know, and that kind of gets shifted around. But that's a huge genre.
From the guy who came up with Jimmy the Intern, I'm sensing perhaps this could be a fake out.
This is real, and I really encourage people to go on Amazon and Google it. And there's actually a couple of crossover novels with the post-apocalyptic Amish romance, and it's this is real.
Oh my goodness gracious! I never conceived of it. I have a pretty good imagination and I'm sort of creative, but that never even entered my mind.
Yep. I'm going to have to put some links to those in the show notes just so that people believe us, because you're probably right. They're probably not going to believe me. Now, to get off that, before we get too far down this rabbit trail, because this is just, it's frightening enough just to even touch on it. Are you surprised at the slow motion economic catastrophe that we're witnessing? I mean, this economy seems to have more lives than a cat. It's like Jason from Halloween, the fabricated statistics and unprecedented money printing and zero interest rates just keep bringing it back from the dead, right?
Exactly. And that's one of the things, I was on your show a couple shows ago, and we talked about, you know, the Federal Reserve's bag of tricks. And I remember we were talking about how we're both amazed that they have all these tricks and we don't even know what they are, because they're probably like ultra secret tricks that, and they're probably derivatives and exotic financial products you and I can't even comprehend, right? And they just keep doing this stuff. And so that's the main reason I quit giving a time frame, you know, in my mind about when I think this is going to happen, because I understand I'm sort of up against an opponent that has this magic bag of tricks, and I don't know what they are. But you know, we both know, and everyone listening to this knows, that the tricks will run out at some point, and the tricks are just inflating the bubble and making things worse and worse and building it up, and we're going higher and higher in an artificial way, which means that when the mechanism lifting us up goes away, it's going to be a harder and harder crash. But yeah, I'm stunned. But here's something that I find interesting, and that's that it's pretty obvious, even I think to some mainstream economists and mainstream people who follow this, that something bad or a series of things that are bad are actually happening. I think it's undeniable now. It's just the question of, well, why haven't these bad things that should crash an economy, economies, plural, across the globe, why hasn't it happened yet? And I think it's what you're talking about, which is just the who would have thought that just printing trillions of dollars would work like this? I mean, I imagine at the conference room at the Federal Reserve, they're sitting around high-fiving each other going, I can't believe this is working. This is amazing. We should have done this earlier.
But it looks like the jig might be up pretty soon. Did you see the August 24th 1,100-point intraday loss on the Dow?
Yeah, that was pretty amazing. And then, of course, the plunge protection team swoops in, and it goes from 1,100 to just net, you know, 550 or whatever, just a 550-point drop in a day. That used to be like half the entire value of the stock market. But, yeah, there's that, and then it kept happening. And it was so obvious that the plunge protection team – and I think all your listeners know what that is. It's an acknowledged, real live, not made up organization, entity, team, or whatever you want to call it, of people at Treasury and Federal Reserve and elsewhere, that when the market starts falling, they start buying stocks, they start doing a variety of things to artificially prop up the market. That's why they call it the plunge protection team. As the market is plunging, they protect it from the plunge. And you know, there's great proof of the stock market in particular being completely manipulated. It's clear. It's a known thing. I mean, you know, Google plunge protection team, and the Treasury Department will say that that's the unofficial name of it. But, you know, and they don't like talking about it, but they do anyway. So the plunge protection team was working fast and furiously, and they did their job. So I guess, you know, kudos to them. They averted a crisis for another few weeks. I mean, that's kind of where we're at right now. Another few weeks, another crisis averted. That is no way to have an economy. That's obviously, it's not even close to prosperity.
Yeah, it's closer to communism. And I think the official term for those guys is the President's Working Group on Financial Markets. And speaking of communism, you know, China's market, they were crashing daily during that time as well. So one of the things they did is they just basically made it illegal to sell. You could buy as much as you want, you just couldn't sell. And another creative idea that they had was they had the down arrows that showed how much the market was going down, and it was pointed in a downward direction, but they just changed the color to green. So you had the down pointing arrows, but they were green, and the numbers running next to it showing the percentage loss, point losses, everything, and they were all green. And I thought that was really, really creative, but I still don't think it was as good as what we did, because I don't know if you watched any of CNBC's coverage that morning, but they brought in David Faber and Jim Cramer, and they were both sitting there like little Muppets and saying that, this is a normal pullback, and it's a good buying opportunity. And to me, 1,100 point loss, there's nothing normal about that, and there's nothing good about that at all. But you know, it seems like between them and the actions of the plunge protection team, like you just talked about, it seems like they talked the market off the ledge and bought us a little bit more time.
Which is just another reason to conclude that it's artificial, is that just talking Jim Cramer saying this is a buying opportunity, and all the people watching CNBC nodding their heads and getting on their computers and buying a bunch of stuff, that just talking and saying nonsensical things can actually have an effect on the market proves that this market, the stock market, is not about the value of companies and about, you know, PE ratios and all the things that it used to be about. It's just press releases and sound bites on a network and people buying things. I mean, it's so completely fake. I don't know how anyone could conclude otherwise.
Yeah. And I don't know, maybe we can do that next time though, is get, just turn the down arrows green and, you know, turn those frowns upside down basically and ban selling.
Yeah. And as I understand it, it was more than just, you know, some sort of legal prohibition on selling. The Ministry of State Security was visiting folks and letting them know that, you know, they'll be going to jail. And as I understand, secondhand, but from a pretty good source, some folks got shot over there too. So that's how they roll in China.
And we can do that under National Defense Authorization Act in 2012, right?
Oh, exactly.
Lock people up and shoot them.
Yeah, and not tell anybody. And there's another thing, if you're a new listener and you think we're making this up, go ahead, Google NDAA 2012. Go ahead and Google it. Look for legitimate, you know, articles and sources and you know, newspapers and magazines that you've heard of before, and just read it, or better yet, read the text of it. It's really long, if you think we're making this up.
And speaking of shooting people, unfortunately, we just had two more shootings right before we recorded this. Another shooting on a campus in Texas and another shooting on a campus in Arizona. That's in addition to the mass shooting out in Oregon. President Obama is calling for common sense gun laws. Don't, as a lawyer, don't you think that makes sense? Shouldn't we just like make it illegal for people to kill people on college campuses with guns?
I'm no lawyer, but I'm pretty sure it's already illegal, Mark.
Oh, then why is it still happening?
I know. It's like people aren't following the laws. And one of the things that I think is a great way to look at this, and I try to talk to normal people who don't think about these things all day long and try to convince them. And here's what I came up with. Normal people out there need to suspend their value system for a moment, and they need to understand that the really devious, horrible bad guys like the Oregon shooter, for example, are very open about it. This was on whatever a social media page. I don't remember which medium it was. And he said, yeah, the more people you kill, the more famous you are. So bear that in mind. Normal, decent people don't think that way. So you have to understand these kind of bad guys think this way. So if your goal is to kill the most number of people, where are you going to do it? Are you going to walk into a police station? That's a pretty bad idea. Are you going to walk into a place where everyone is unarmed, a gun-free zone? And I think there's no more persuasive reason to conclude that gun-free zones are a horrible idea than listening to what the killers themselves say. They're telling us that this is where they gravitate to because they can, in their twisted minds, kill more people and become more famous. So why are we giving them that advantage? Why are we doing what these psychopaths want? That doesn't make any sense. That's not common sense at all.
So common sense would be something like making sure that what we need is like an amendment to the Constitution that would say nobody can infringe on your right to have a gun and be able to defend yourself.
Yeah, we want to follow some laws and not other ones. I think following that law and actually honoring the Second Amendment is not on the page of the status, but they then flip it around and assume that people who are insane are going to follow that little decal sticker on the door of a college or something that says gun-free zone. Yeah, it's – yeah. You know what, though? I think at some point – I don't know what point it is. Normal people out there, you know, the sheeple, the general population, they're going to start to get this idea that gun-free zones aren't working. I can't prove it, and it's just a sense that I have that with the tempo of all these shootings that there's going to be enough TV coverage that's going to, you know, show a picture real quick of a gun-free zone sticker on a door. And people, because the American people, I mean, many of them are asleep, but, you know, quite a few of them are pretty smart and that they're going to get this. So now the bad news is it's going to take a lot more shootings for people to understand this. And that's the part I don't want.
We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. I've personally been buying gold and silver from JM Bullion for over 2 years. They offer the best prices over spot that I can find, and I've never had a problem with an order. If you're looking to trade in some of your fiat paper for real money, check out jmbullion.com today.
When disaster strikes, it's too late to prepare. PrepperRecon.com offers MOLLE-compatible individual first aid kits for your home, auto, or bug-out bag. These kits have everything you need to address a traumatic injury, including an Israeli battle dressing, quick clot, EMT shears, suture kit, Steri-Strips, tourniquet, ACS chest seal, tough strip bandages, gauze, and so much more. $89 includes shipping. To buy your individual first aid kit, go to PrepperRecon.com and click the store tab at the top of the homepage. Order today before it's too late.
And it seems like there's just more and more gun-free zones every day, and it's getting to the point to where about the only place you can be armed anymore is maybe in your own home or if you're on a farm or something like that. Even if you've got a license, you can't carry anywhere near a courthouse. You can't carry anywhere near a post office. And most institutions of learning, any type of a school, you can't carry anywhere near there. And in even South Carolina, you can't, you know, what you would think they were – You would think that that's somewhere that's a real pocket of conservatism, and you can't carry in a church in South Carolina. It seems like it's just getting worse and worse.
Yeah, and I've had some legislative experience in so many of these one-off goofy laws, like you mentioned, South Carolina not carrying in a church, their reactions to specific incidents, and some handful of legislators say, you know, oh my goodness, there was a shooting in my district, and we're going to put an end to that by passing a law. The other thing that I find kind of interesting are the non-legal prohibitions, the gun-free zones that are merely suggestive. Yesterday, the athletic club that my son was swimming at had a sticker up that was new that said gun-free zone, and I proceeded to walk in with my concealed pistol because I don't care. You know, there was the hospital yesterday that I went to that was supposedly a gun-free zone that I completely ignored. By the way, one of the members of the real team had a baby, so that's why we were there. I'm respecting his privacy and his new daughter's privacy. But anyway, so that was nice. But anyway, so there are all these things, and I think that I used to be a little bit inhibited. Movie theaters would be another example. It's like, oh, geez, there's a sign I better not carry. And then that didn't last very long because I realized that there were actual real-life threats out there. It wasn't just some intellectual exercise. It was, I need to be armed because I'm unfortunately in a gun-free zone. I put that, of course, in air quotes, and I need to react to the people, a person who might be in this gun-free zone that is here for a reason, and that would be to kill as many people as possible, which is not going to include me.
And you're right, and it's theaters, there's hotels, restaurants, huge restaurant change. I think Buffalo Wild Wings is one of them.
It's funny you mentioned that. After going to the hospital and meeting the newest member of the team who was born, the guy said, hey, let's go out to eat. And somebody said, Buffalo Wild Wings. And I said, not on your life. They have a gun-free policy. And, you know, so that got scratched off the list. So another restaurant got the business last night. So there you go, Buffalo Wild Wings. That's the price you pay.
So let's give a plug to the place that you went instead that allows you to carry.
It's a regional thing. It's Red Robin.
No, Red Robins are around. They're all over the place.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay, cool. I thought it was a Seattle thing.
Yeah, the hamburger place.
I don't get out much. Yeah.
Yeah, Red Robin.
That's right.
Yeah. All right. So Red Robin instead of Buffalo Wild Wings, everybody. That's you're wondering where you're going tonight for a good fun place to go and carry. So that's great. Now, the line of folks in Washington stopping the leftist gun grabbers, that line's getting thinner and thinner. Would you agree that the NRA is the only thing standing between Obama and what is referred to as the Australian option, basically where all guns are confiscated?
Yeah, I think so. The NRA, of course, is the organization that holds together the political blockade. I think quite a few congressmen and senators, this is at the federal level, they get that they're out of office if they vote against guns. And it always amazes me, as down as I am on a liberal place like my state, Washington State, I'm always pleasantly surprised at the number of Democrats and the Republicans in my state are squishy. So the number of Republicans who vote against gun control. So there's this, I think, deeply ingrained understanding in a lot of elected officials that they ought not to pass this stuff. But the reason it's ingrained in them is that the NRA, which is by far the largest organization, makes sure that their members know voting records and all of these other things. The NRA doesn't, I don't think they donate a ton of money. I think they just do a lot of grassroots things and make sure that NRA members know what's up and all of that. So, yeah, I think if it weren't for the NRA, you would have it might take a year or two. I mean, for the electeds to forget how much of a voting block is at stake, but it would be pretty bad. I know this, that obviously, you know, the bad guys in government would love to have Australian style gun control. They think it would work and they think they can pull it off. That is a big flaw on their part. If they even tried that stuff, I think there would be a very violent reaction to it. And so we all get that. We understand that. Most normal people in this country do, but the liberal elites are so, I don't know, delusional. I mean, remember I was saying at the Federal Reserve Conference Room, they're probably high-fiving each other and they think they're brilliant because this is working. Well, they just think they're super smart people, way smarter than us, and they can pull this off. So they would do it if they could.
And for the church folks out there that really don't want to make a fuss, how long do you think they would be able to worship freely once we were disarmed?
Oh, my goodness. I don't know, about one or two Sundays. not very long. That thing is a pet peeve of mine. I don't know, not religious left necessarily, but religious people who are politically agnostic, religiously devout but politically agnostic, they just think that laws and politics are an earthly thing and that's just a bunch of people arguing and we'll just go to heaven and there won't be any Republicans or Democrats. They're right about that, by the way, but they're wrong about the idea that we don't need to protect our rights down here on earth. And I don't know what they're basing it on. Of course, you know, we've got the sell your cloak and buy a sword. We've got Jesus overturning, you know, the tables in the temple and all these other things. There's no biblical support for the idea that Christians need to just lie down and just be victims of government. I mean, evil government. I mean, we're supposed to resist evil, and when the government is evil, that would mean resisting government. I don't understand how it means rolling over to government, except, of course, I understand what's really going on, and that's that you got a lot of people who don't understand theology, don't understand the Bible, don't understand the faith that they profess, and they're taking the easy way out. It's like everything else. I mean, why rock the boat? And it's so much easier to say, oh, I'm all for peace and love and harmony, and not have any idea what that means, because it doesn't work out that way. Now, in, you know, the kingdom of God, it will work out. It'll be great. There won't be a need for any guns, and that would be fantastic, but we're not there yet. We're still down here.
And so if we can equate gun confiscation with basically us also probably losing what's left of our religious freedoms, because we've seen Kim Davis, she's already been incarcerated for her faith. And so we could probably guess that that's not the last time something like that's going to happen in this country. Do you think it would be safe to say that besides praying, maybe donating to the NRA might be the most loving thing you could do for your church?
You know what? That makes a lot of sense. I think, you know, one of the cool things about the NRA, they have gift memberships, and, you know, that doesn't come with a magazine or anything. I think it's $10 or something like that, or $15. It's a great thing to do. You know, sign up your kids. It also increases the roles of membership, which is something that, trust me, elected people actually look to. I mean, when the NRA can say, in this state legislative district, we have 11,000 members. And okay, let's say several hundred of them are like three-year-old kids who got a NRA gift, you know, membership in their stocking or whatever. That's still okay. But yeah, there's a clear linkage between Second Amendment rights and every other right. And just look at countries that don't have a Second Amendment and they don't have any of the other rights usually. And if they do have some of the other rights, they don't last very long. So yeah, guns protect. I mean, you know, George Washington's quote, you know, Second Amendment is the teeth, I'm paraphrasing now, that protect all the other liberties in the Constitution. He's a smart dude too.
Yeah, he was. And you said something there a few minutes ago about Christians that need to get involved in the political process. There's so many Christians people that call themselves Christian that voted for Obama and have voted for several other candidates that were strong supporters of abortion. And, you know, now it's kind of whatever they thought of abortion was before, whether they thought it was a blob or whatever. I think that the Center for Medical Progress, all of their videos and the things that have come out and what Planned Parenthood says about the procedures that they perform and the money they make and their aspirations for this ongoing slaughter of America's most innocent. I think that we know now what abortion is, and it's murder. And those people that call themselves Christians that would vote for somebody that upholds this process and has allowed this to stay on the books and be legal for over four decades, do you think they're going to have blood on their hands on Judgment Day?
Yeah. To take a serious topic and say something a little not serious, I hope this isn't flippant. You remember I Love Lucy, and Ricky would say that Lucy had some splaining to do.
Yeah.
People that support people who enable abortion are going to have some explaining to do. And I want to clarify something. I mean, I think Christians should be involved in the political process, but that doesn't mean that the political process is going to fix things and be a savior. I mean, you need to be involved in the sense of standing up for your rights and knowing about candidates and those sorts of things. I think you and I are saying the same thing, but I don't want anyone listening to this to think that, you know, I think that all we need to do is register enough good people to vote and make sure they vote. And that, of course, assumes there are good candidates who will actually do good things. And that's the big missing link in all of this. But yeah, Christians are supposed to, you know, be a part of the world. I know not to be taken over, right, and be parts of the bad world, but we're supposed to be part of our communities and being informed and knowing about liberty and standing up for liberty is something we ought to do. I can't find any authority that says we're supposed to just cower and let tyrants rule over us. I just don't see any authority. I know I sound like a lawyer here, but I don't get the precedent that says I have to submit to fascists.
Now we've got the verse in Romans 13 that says that we're supposed to submit to the governing authorities. But I'm and you're a lawyer, so you know more about this than me. But I've got a copy of the Constitution hanging on my wall, and at the top, in significantly larger letters is "We the People." So I'm assuming that "We the People" that's the ultimate authority. And I'm guessing that document has some significance defining what authority we have. Is that true?
Yeah, it's very simple. The Constitution says, and even the Supreme Court admits, that the Constitution is the highest law of the land. So it controls, and anything a lower, I don't know, law, a statute, an ordinance, whatever it might be, that is in conflict with the Constitution is null and void. again, basic law. No one would disagree with that, not even liberals. And so the Constitution is the authorities, if you will. And so when we need to follow what the authorities say, that means the Constitution. And obviously Congress couldn't pass a law allowing, you know, the execution in the streets of left-handed people. That would be unconstitutional. If Congress did that, I don't see the Christian wisdom or the, I don't know, the doctrinal wisdom of Christians saying, well, you know, my oldest child is left-handed. I guess we got to go shoot him. I mean, that's just insanity. Yet that's how I think weak-minded people who want to get along, that's how they think, and they are given cover. They're given this facade of, oh, I'm being a good citizen. I'm doing what the government said. And you're not being – well, you're not being a good Christian. You're not even being a good citizen. Letting the government do whatever it wants is not being a good citizen.
And you said that, you know, the political process is not a savior, and it's not gonna pull us out of the mess that we're in, and we all need to get involved on a higher level. But I do think that that's kind of like the minimum thing that people can do. And you'll hear a lot of people that say, "Well, I'm just not gonna vote because the elections are rigged." And you know what? I don't know. They may be. But that's not what you're going to have to answer for on Judgment Day. You're not going to have to, you know, God's not going to say, oh, well, you know, we'll take into account that the votes were rigged. You know, it's going to be about what you did, that you're only going to be answering for you and your actions. So I think that it's the least you can do. And even if it's just a type of blind protest against what's going on, you know, I think you need to get up and get out and go vote just, you know, just as a form of protest. Even if you think that your vote absolutely doesn't matter and it's a complete waste of time, you know, like I said, you're only going to be held accountable for what you did on Judgment Day. So make sure that, you know, you don't have that blood of those unborn children on your hands, number one, by supporting a candidate that supports abortion, but also, you know, which would be sort of a sin of commission, but that you don't have that blood on your hand by a sin of omission because you absolutely did absolutely nothing either.
Yeah, and another thing to think about is that, especially at the federal level, in most elections, there are third-party candidates who believe what we believe. And if you think elections are rigged so your vote doesn't matter, go ahead and vote for a third-party candidate who believes what you do, because if you don't think your vote matters and you're voting for someone who's going to get 0.5%, okay, your vote doesn't matter in the sense of the number of electoral votes from your state, right? It doesn't matter in that sense. Okay, if you're okay with that, and you know, you can be okay with it, at least you voted for somebody. You did a thing. It didn't ultimately triumph, but you did a thing that, you know, carried out your beliefs, and you should. And I vote for third parties all the time. You get down to like the, you know, mayor level or something, and there isn't often a third party. So that's why I say when it comes to the bigger elections, you do have choices. There's not going to be a ballot on any – no state is going to have a ballot that's going to have just people who are – you know, entirely pro-abortion. There will be pro-life people somewhere on some ballot.
Hey, Preppers and Patriots, that's the end of the first half of my conversation with Glenn Tate. Tune in next week for the rest of the show. God bless and happy prepping.
In the days of Noah, Book 3, Perdition, a global empire arises like a phoenix from the ashes of the world that was. The emerging order is unified by a new global currency and a single world religion, which are mandated by an imposed UN treaty. In the interest of unity and peace, a zero-tolerance policy for dissenters is enacted and strictly enforced. Hunted down like common criminals for daring to resist the state, Noah Parker's group will have to rely on faith and wits to endure the powers of darkness, which are quickly consuming the earth. Buy your copy of The Days of Noah, Book 3, Perdition, by best-selling author Mark Goodwin in paperback, Kindle, or audio edition from Amazon.com today.